Ment Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Mates Radio. An open line today, so call, text, email and WhatsApp for whatever's on your mind. Yesterday it was all about the Department of Education, Sport and Culture, where the Minister and two political members were in yesterday. So anything you want to follow up on that, there's lots of questions we didn't get to yesterday, and I'll just run through a few of those today. So what do you think about this specialised border agency that Mr Cannon was talking about? He was responding to a question at the start of this month's sitting of Tynwald. And because of events in Belfast, the agency's introduction isn't in response to that attack, but rather a decision taken by Comin several weeks ago to help partners in the UK. That full story is at makesradio.com on the news page. Let's get to the lines first. David's with us. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. I just want to support, I presume you can hear me anyway.
Loud and clear.
Devin Watson and Peter Washington from Douglas Town Council. And I'm talking now as a local authority member from another area, just to support their endeavours to try and get government to, A, spend taxpayers' money on providing houses and where there are brownfield sites in each of the islands areas. And how we're struggling, in my opinion anyway, as one of them, we're struggling to get Treasury or the government to pick up anything and run with it. And I wanted to support Peter Washington's last little comments. If people would like to listen to it sometime, go back on it. When he said, why does government hold housing in their stock? Why isn't those units in the local authority areas given or released back to each of the local authorities, because we can provide housing then to people that need them.
Right, because at the moment it's in DOI, isn't it?
Yes, and it's there's always been a controversy there, and there still is, till it's proven to me anyway. DOI seem to get everything that on the housing side. If they want anything, it's done. Their finances are blessed more quicker than certain local authorities when we have to issue bonds and stuff like that. But I also want to say to those people listening out there too is you need to get onto these potential new MHKs and just say to them, what are you doing with all the land that government own? And there's quite a stack of it. You know, Andy, yourself, we've been through them all, the prison, the school, down Park Road, two pubs and whatever. And don't forget, we've forgotten after TT Week, haven't we? Do you remember the shop at the bottom that was selling motorcycle gear?
Whereabouts? At Quarterbridge?
No. In Backer Strand Street.
Oh, yes. The old M & Co.
Yeah, M & Co. It's still got the sign on it. And it's still, when it's quite heavy rain, if you notice too, the manhole's slightly come up a little bit. Not saying it's sewerage, it could be just stormwater. But those issues we've got is, if we're not going to do something with them, why don't we sell them and create some money?
Well, the thing is, all those properties, they sit in different departments, don't they?
And that's the issue.
Right.
But don't we have a government and the Council of Ministers? And doesn't the Chief Minister, God bless him, we were going to have savings, and it's supposed to be like 4 million, and it ended up 1.5 or something like that. But that's a start, isn't it, Andy? But why don't we do something to these there are individuals who'd love to build houses and local authorities who'd love to build houses if they were given a chance and we were given the green light instead of being stuck in Treasury all the time waiting for an answer. I know for a fact there's a big project in Onken, and I'll say it's Springfield Court, still waiting for finances to be endorsed so we can modernise the sheltered units there. And finally, and I'll say this because I had it confirmed last night at the meeting there, we wrote to the Minister for Health regarding the Ballacurn Trust, which has 12 units lying empty for nearly 8 months now, nobody in them, and we could fill them tomorrow. And we haven't had acknowledgement or a reply, or even saying, we're looking into it.
Why do you think is, David? Why do you think, and as you say, Mr. Washington and Mr. Watson basically indicated that they just get pushed back every time they mention anything or ask questions of Treasury and government. They basically, it's kind of, you know, well, push off.
Yeah, well, that's the issue. I don't know what it is. And we, because we're citizens of the Isle of Man, we demand respect as well, don't we, from these ministers and politicians that are in the area. And really, do we want to know how many cones are on the Isle of Man? And what do we do with them? And some of the stupid questions that come out from central government, it's unbelievable when there's things to be done.
Okay. I appreciate your call, David. Thanks for calling. Cheers. Now, 11 minutes after 12, I don't know whether you heard Perspective on Sunday. It was a great programme with Phil Gorn and Councillor Devon Watson and Councillor Peter Washington from Douglas City Council. Devon said the local authority wants to build new social housing on brownfield sites, but central government says no. Devon Watson's voiced concern that private companies can access government support to bring previously occupied sites back into use, but not local authorities. That's the Regeneration Fund. We've contacted DOI for a response. We do know that a public sector housing policy is due to be considered in this July sitting of Tynwald, which will look to improve access to social housing, and that government's committed to deliver 1,000 new affordable homes in 10 years. In 10 years? That's 100 a year. That's two a week. Would you like to see local authorities given support to develop brownfield sites? And do you think it's right that private developers can access funding, but not Douglas City Council? If you've got any thoughts on this, and certainly in the forthcoming election, housing will be front and centre. It was front and centre 5 years ago, and it will remain that way. So if you can, take a listen to that. Go to Manx Radio. You can go to podcasts. It'll be on there with Phil Gorn, Peter Washington, and Devon. And actually, Devon's going to be on in a couple of weeks' time, so no doubt we'll bring that up again. In fact, we'll have difficulty shutting him up about it, to be quite honest. Right, let's get to the lines now. I think who we got now? It is Christine. Hello, Christine.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Off you go.
Good. So I'm calling about Tynwald Court that's meeting today, and the fact that Rob Callister is standing up to report on the recommendations from his committee about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and so on. They made 12 recommendations, having interviewed, gathered evidence from experts over a period of 18 months, considered what they found, and put forward these 12 recommendations. These went to DESC. And DESC has accepted two of them, and those two, I believe, would have to be accepted because of the Equalities Act. They rejected one outright, and they amended nine. So as a dyslexia expert, I've been in this field forever, and I've got several degrees, and you know, it's my bread and butter. I just feel rather disappointed because some of the things they have said I think might be misleading for our MHKs. They were basically saying that there isn't a robust definition, where in fact there is. Last year, a new definition was released by our professional bodies, and it's very clear. And anybody giving a dyslexia diagnosis who is an expert teacher who does this has to stick to that definition, whereas the educational psychologists, such as we have in the department, are very highly educated. They hold a doctorate in their subject, and they can assess across a number of complex needs, including dyslexia. So, you know, a much wider training, but maybe not as deep as experts such as myself have. So, number one, they said there isn't a robust definition. Since the early 2000s, expert teachers have been able to diagnose for dyslexia as long as they get this level 7 master's course and get the accreditation to do so. So I think there's some historical stuff going on where they think only educational psychologists, you know, are the ones to give this diagnosis. The next thing is that we've never said that it needs to be a diagnosis-based system. And what DESC is saying is that we're asking for a needs-led definition or program so that children are assessed in schools and watched in schools, and their needs are catered to depending what appears. Well, that's exactly what we say. Any literacy difficulty should be addressed, and any child who needs extra support should have that specialist support. What we are saying is if the intervention then doesn't help the child, then you have to take another look, maybe around the age of 8, when you can have a diagnosis and say, what's going on here? So we can give and tailor this education intervention they need to their dyslexia. So, you know, we're not against needs-led teaching. But what they're trying to say, the DESC is trying to say, is we are against it. We're not. Yeah. Everybody who needs help should get it.
Okay.
And finally, they are... it's very important that you have some experts that our teachers can refer to. There's been very little training of teachers in dyslexia over the past 10, 15 years. A lot of what has been done has been given for free by the Manx Dyslexia Association, which I used to be a part of. We would bring in experts from across the top of their fields, and they would offer training to teachers, information to parents, maybe do some assessment for children, and we're talking about dyscalculia as well. And we did all this for free. And we just felt there was very little support at that time,
right.
And the teachers weren't getting enough education.
Well,
so saying that...
Christine, let me for the layperson, let me just, I think if I get this right, dyslexia is the ability to decode and spell words, what they used to call 50 years ago word blindness. Dyspraxia is motor skills and coordination. Dyscalculia is maths and understanding numbers. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. And dysgraphia is a problem with actual writing.
Right.
So that's all correct. And the point is, I don't feel that we're being properly represented with our point of view. The final thing that DESC has said is that you don't need these expert teachers. We've suggested, or I didn't, the committee suggested, there would be a pool of expert teachers who could, you know, help other schools, other teachers in schools, or they could go into schools, teachers could come to them. They said there's no evidence to show that that's useful. However, in the UK, they've just spent $1.8 billion on doing just that with their Experts at Hand program, where there'll be a pool of experts that schools can talk to, or those experts can go into school. So if they found the evidence to launch a $1.8 billion program, right, why couldn't our desk do
so
that?
So why haven't we been training teachers, Christine?
I don't know. I just don't know the answer. Desk is reluctant to accept the word dyslexia from my experience with them. And they don't like labels. And that's fine, but it's not up to Desk to say whether you should be labeled or not. So Bill Henderson, who was an MHK in the last Parliament, stood up when this was being debated to establish the Select Committee, and he said, I am dyslexic. I don't want to be known as somebody with literacy difficulties. I want to be known as somebody with dyslexia, because that's what my issue is. So it's up to the individual to decide whether they're labelled or not, not DESC to decide,
right,
whether they're going to use that term or not. So
okay,
there's a lot going on. I mean, those are just three points, three areas, but I could go through all 12 amendments and find, you know, positive things that would help to get the children what they need. And this really sad thing is quite a few of these children who don't get the support they need, either don't get to the universities or the training that they want, or they end up in the, you know, having brushes with the criminal justice system because they're so disappointed, they're so lacking in self-esteem by the time they've been chucked at the end of an education system that doesn't understand them. And it's just very worrying that, okay, we're not getting this right, because it's our only opportunity.
Okay, Christine, we appreciate it, and we've started the conversation. Thanks for calling today.
Okay. Okie doke, thank you.
19 minutes past 12, and a message in from Rose, who just said, yes, dyslexia was a roadblock that I had to negotiate myself. People thought I was a bit thick because I couldn't understand words and read very quickly. It's something that you can get over, and I'm amazed that there isn't an expert pool of people on the Isle of Man who can cope with this. That's dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, and dysgraphia. And that's something we'll look at. And, of course, Rob Callister was part of that. Actually, Rob Callister is standing in the constituency of Oncombe in the forthcoming general election. Also standing, Gabriella Corkish, Julie Edge, Rachel Glover, and Oliver Lockwood. And here's Julian with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. A bit murky out there. I was just looking on your webcam. I think it doesn't look too clear there with you either, I think.
I can't see anything. Land ho! But apparently it's lovely in Ramsey, looking on the webcam in Peel as well. So it's the south and the east that got it.
Yeah. No, I noticed. I was in town a bit earlier. And actually, I noticed the demonstrations outside about assisted dying. I might be miscounting, but it looked like three times more people were against the assisted dying than for it in the numbers that were stood outside Tynwald. But perhaps it's changed since I was there. So the amendments to the assisted dying bill are being discussed actually right now. Dr. Allinson is now speaking as we're on now. But I thought it's worth looking at the latest events in other jurisdictions that have already have assisted dying legislation. I'm just looking around. City News Vancouver reported in March this year on 83-year-old Miriam Lancaster. She was taken to Vancouver General Hospital in Canada with excruciating back pain. While she was in A&E, before any tests were performed, a female doctor approached her and asked her if she wished to enroll in medical assistance in dying or their MAID system. Her and her daughter, Jordan, were horrified to hear this, and of course they didn't enroll. Turned out she had a hairline fracture in her sacrum at the base of her spine. She went on to make a full recovery and has since walked up a volcano in Guatemala and is now attending cookery classes, which is all right. February this year, the New York Post article titled "Shocking Report Exposes Terrifying Reality of Assisted Suicide in Canada." In Ontario, 65 people who applied for assisted dying were euthanized the same day without any cooling off period. A report later stated that it was easier for doctors to arrange same day euthanasia than arrange for end of life palliative care.
And what was this publication again?
That was in the New York Post. And the title is "Shocking Report Exposes Terrifying Reality of Assisted Suicide in Canada." It also goes on to mention a disabled woman in her 80s who changed her mind and withdrew her request whilst she was there. However, her husband requested it again on her behalf and she was euthanized later that day. Moving towards Europe, the Brussels Times reported in March this year that euthanasia has increased by 12% in a single year between 2024 and 25 to 4,500. And a quarter of those, or over 1,100, were not near death, which is a huge increase on the originally promised rare occurrences that would happen.
Okay. Okay, so what relevance does this have to the Isle of Man then, Julian?
The fact that you've got Canada has had 10 years to get this right, and it's getting worse. The Netherlands have had 24 years, and it's getting worse. So rather than talking about the amendments, which I know Dr. Anson's amendments and there are problems with all of those, the question that's getting forgotten about is, should we do it anyway? Because all the jurisdictions that have gone ahead with it, it's getting worse. If you look at Canada, they're up at 16,500 people a year are getting euthanized, and they're saying that by the end of this year, it will be over 100,000 people will have been euthanized since they started 10 years ago. It's just absolutely going crazy with this.
Okay, what do you think should happen on the Isle of Man then? Because, the Chief Minister got a real telling off from former MHK, Mr. Gill, when he said it was third-rate legislation.
Well, you see, the thing is, what I find interesting is, when you look at how the Netherlands, they started off like, if you imagine, in 2002 when they started, it was strictly for terminal illness only, 6 months foreseeable. And then in 2010, they expanded the interpretation, but they didn't change the law. So it's not even amendments. They were changing the interpretation, and they included things like polypathology, so people with multiple chronic illnesses, not just terminal. And then in 2015, they started including psychiatric and dementia cases, including accumulated old age problems. And then in 2020, they broadened the interpretation again to include frailty, including vision and hearing loss, mobility decline, and loneliness. And then finally, in 23, which was the last time they included more, they included infants, minors, and euthanasia for young adults with psychiatric illness. So you can get around the legislation even once it's in place with changes in interpretation rather than any major legislative changes.
So do you think that the Chief Minister is right to be cautious about this?
Absolutely, 100%. You know, if you look at the amendments that Dr. Allinson is talking about right now on your AM service, the Safeguarding Board, they can advise against somebody applying, but the person who's applying only has to have regard to it. So they don't even have to take it seriously. And the process of making a referral, the regulations, they're saying may be a regulation, not a must. So it's discretionary for the regulatory side of this. When you're at the point of, you know, when the person is about to be, you know, going through the actual process, there could only be one person present, and the subsequent review is going to be made out by that person. So if you've got one person on their own in the room with that person, with the one that's going through assisted dying, you're kind of marking your own homework. And it doesn't have to be anyone specialised. It can be a GP, a nurse, a pharmacist, but nobody who's specially trained if there's any problems, you know, with somebody who's quite healthy and they reject the drugs. Okay. It just makes you wonder if the question is, should we do it? Because the other jurisdictions, they're all going worse and worse. If you look at the latest reports now, 10 years for Canada, over 20 years for the Netherlands, and it's getting worse. So I don't know. Okay. Don't know, Andy.
All right. Well, we appreciate opinion. Good to hear from you. Thank you, Julian, if you have any thoughts on this matter. And obviously, if I'm just checking at Tim Wolfe.
Of laws such as this. That is why.
There's Mr. Callister talking in Timwell at the moment, as Julian said. That's on AM 1368 or via the website, as we always broadcast proceedings of Timwell live on Mex Radio. A couple of messages from the answer phone.
Hi, this is Margaret in Ramsey. I just wanted to let you know I've used the Cottage Hospital a few times, and I think because of the rodent problem, the biggest issue for them is control of waste, food waste from patients and from the kitchens and meals that are served to patients. So if they control the food waste, they won't have a rodent problem. And definitely, I think the Cottage Hospital should stay in the north. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Okay, so I've just been up to the test centre. All I need to do is renew my driving licence. When I looked at it online, you've got to upload a photograph and all that sort of thing. And I'm like, oh, don't know how to do that. I'm not very techy. So I thought, oh, this girl can get a form. So I got up here. There were six people in front of me. Lots of them were doing, you know, tax and all sorts of things, re-registering cars. That obviously will take quite a lot of time. There was one person on the desk. Well, there was only space for one person to be on the desk. There was just one desk for that. So it's taken me about 50 minutes. I did ask a lady who sort of walked past into the door to the back office if somebody just needed a form and if there was anywhere that there was forms, and actually said, why don't they put out forms, you know, like they had in the post office. You could just pick up the correct form that you wanted for that sort of thing. But she told me that the reason that they weren't putting forms out is literally because they want everybody to do it online. That was her exact words. So yeah, had to wait 50 minutes. When I got there, they'd actually run out of forms to renew driving licences. So when I said to the woman, well, maybe you've run out because lots of people are wanting forms. So, you know, there's a bit of a conclusion in that alone, isn't there? So when I left, We'd all had a conversation. I think there was about maybe a dozen people in the queue at that point, and they were all saying just how absolutely ridiculous it is. So yeah, it was a shambles, to be fair. Thank you very much. Bye.
Two messages from the answer phone. If you can't call during the normal man in line, or you're not able to for whatever reason, you can always leave a message on the answer phone. Practice it if you want. Call 682-631 and we'll play it out on air.
There's monkeys and meerkats, penguins galore. You can meet with a panda, owls, lemurs and more.
The Currax Wildlife Park is open 7 days a week. So book your tickets and experiences online now at currackswildlifepark.im.
Manx Memorials in Ballasalla will guide you when creating beautiful, lasting memorials across the island. From a wide range of granite and marble headstones, custom inscriptions, expert renovations and pet memorials, adding care and compassion in every detail. We offer families peace of mind for years with perpetual grave care. We're there when you need them most. Call 843 861 or email matthew@manxmemorials.co.uk.
A new era of private healthcare on the island is just beginning with Clinique Savoie. Clinique Savoie is the island's first truly integrated private healthcare service. So from health checks to GPs, specialist consultations or connections to UK specialists, you'll experience care that's connected, considered and personal. From state-of-the-art clinics in Douglas and Ramsey. Take the next step in your guided health journey. Visit cliniquesavoie.com or call 682000. Thoughtful island healthcare, expertly delivered. Clinique Savoie.
SMS Trading. New and second-hand furniture from flat pack to fully built. See our range at 3 St Paul Square, Ramsey. All-island delivery and man-in-a-van service available. Call SMS Trading on 315151 or find SMS Trading on Facebook.
Jerry, what on earth are they doing next door?
It's all right, Margot. Tom and Barbara are just feeding the pigs.
But it's so unseemly, Jerry.
The Service Players present The Good Life at the Gaiety Theatre on the 25th to the 27th of June.
Self-sufficiency in Surbiton. This is The Good Life, Barbara.
Not if you keep letting Geraldine the goat out. Margot will never forgive us.
I'll win her over with a gift of some of our Peapod Burgundy.
Mm-hmm.
The Good Life. Go to villagaiety.com for tickets. Supported by Manx Radio.
Manx Radio. Summer of Football, brought to you by Walton's Electrical Store.
And with all the action now well underway across the USA, Canada and Mexico, we've teamed up with Walton's to give you the chance to win a 55-inch TV. To win, all you have to do is work out the famous footballer in the weekly post that will be pinned to the top of the Manx Radio Facebook page. Then listen out to greatest hits every weekday evening from 7 and Saturday live between 1 and 5 each weekend until the 19th of July for your chance to get your name in the big prize draw.
Enjoy a better picture with a new TV from Walton's for perfect football enjoyment. Walton's have offers across a wide range of TVs and electrical items in store.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
27 minutes before one. Juan's on now. Hi, Juan.
How are you, Andy?
Well, very well, thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, I was waiting to see if there was any white papal smoke coming up above the House of Keys, because they're choosing an Attorney General at the moment.
Is that right? So,
yes, I thought we'd wait for the white smoke to come up, but you won't be able to see it today anyway, I don't think. So
when's it going to be announced?
I don't know. I think there's about 5 or 6 on the running, I believe. So let's wait and see what transpires from that. Just a couple of quick things before I do my main subject, which is about yesterday's programme. The car tax, people talking about the car tax. I've got to say, I done mine online the other day, and it was back within 3 days in the post. So I understand that, you know, a lot of people can't use the online system, but it is efficient. I've got, you know, hands up, got to say that. It was back and the disc was in the window within 3 days. Another subject, well, probably we're going to go on to a bit in detail another time, but the anaerobic digester meeting last week at Andreas. I heard Quirky mention about going down there and there was no tea and coffee. Well, he missed it. We were stood there drinking tea and coffee and chocolate biscuits, David, and my batteries were 95% full by the time I left the hall.
Great.
It was Peter Washington, that was a definitely a good interview the other day with Peter and Devin as well, I believe. Definitely people worth listening to what he had to say, if people can get that on playback. Yesterday's show, Andy, I don't know whether it was a busy show or whether they didn't want to talk to live people phoning in.
Well, it was very busy. And also, the thing is that if I get it both ways. If we take all calls, then people say, what's the point in sending in messages? And if I take the messages, people say, you didn't take my call.
I know it's a difficult one, but the lines obviously are if there's no calls getting taken at all, the lines just don't move, so that no one can get through at all. So it was a difficult one. So again, maybe a longer show when these people come on, we'll interrogate them a lot deeper. So I noticed the Green Goddess is standing again, so let's see how that works out for her. A few points on that.
I've got to say this, you know, don't you? Daphne Kane is standing, as is Peter Cumin, Sean Bostrom and Anthony Allen are standing in Garth.
Anthony Allen, yeah, ex-director of the Flour Mill, I believe, Anthony. Yeah, yeah, so it's a bit of business knowledge there, that's good. Paul Crane talked about keeping our culture in some of the bits that he said there. So just want to park that at the side for a little bit. And we're talking about the recent internet thing that was launched yesterday by the Prime Minister in England about children not being able to use the internet.
Under-16s.
Under-16s, yes. Yes, and I'm just wondering how that's going to be policed in this day and age. Where, you know, kids are very tech savvy now, and VPNs and everything. I don't know where they're coming from, and what would they be protecting them from, Andy?
Well, I think what he said was harmful content, didn't he? But I mean, that means all sorts of things, and you're quite right. Yeah. They're going to rely on children and/or parents and guardians being honest, because obviously the tech companies will have to restrict access, and they'll have to have the details. The person whose account it is will have to tell the truth about their age.
And I would like to have drilled into that yesterday as to what a harmful comment is in this day and age, because we seem to have a lot of lightweights these days that are offended at the slightest little thing. But on talking about that, on harmful comments and what that could be, I'm interested that primary schools here are going out of their way to teach children about pronouns. He, they, she, they, what, where, when, rather than teaching about something that should be taught about with younger kids. I don't know what the emphasis is with that, and I would love to have talked to the Green Goddess about the sex education and pronouns and everything else, I believe.
So is that absolutely certain, then, that children in primary school are given is it just an illustrative lesson? No, it's not constant, is it? They're just told about people who want to use their own pronouns.
And again, the question I wanted to ask, Andy, is this education or is it promotion? And that's the big point here. Is it educating people across the board of what to expect in life, or is it promoting? And this is a question I've asked before. And again, this seems to be sneaking into our education system here. A lot of people and a lot of parents are concerned about where this is heading. And again, I wanted to ask this question of them, of what is involved in this, and whose book you're taking this from. I take it it's again from the Scottish book, and whether this is all relevant in the Isle of Man. And the other point on this as well, going back to Paul Crane and keeping our Manx culture, who's paying for translation costs in our schools? We've now been told that there's over 1,000 people in our schools or children that English is the second language. So who is paying for this? My understanding was if you come and assimilate and integrate into a culture, you accept the culture and you assimilate. Why are we paying for translators? And how many of these children's parents cannot speak English that are here? And before anyone kicks off about racism, this is not about racism, this is about assimilation and going to someone else's land and someone else's culture and integrating. That's what this is about. So I ask the question of how much is this costing us for translators and where we're heading down this road?
Yeah. I mean, the immigration process on the Isle of Man fairly well takes care of that, Juan, in that to get resident, if you like, you have to pass an English test as well as a history test. So you have to know. You have to know your onions. You can't just come here and just put up the shutters and not learn anything. Apart from that, I mean, surely you would want to learn English if you came to the Isle of Man, June.
So my question to you then, Andy, is why have we got translators in the schools?
Don't know.
It's exactly my point.
Yeah.
What you said there is
and
exactly
definitely, and definitely,
what I've
do
heard.
We have translators in schools?
We have got translators in schools, yes. And it's already been said that English is the second language of a lot of these children.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I can drill down further into this. It's not a problem. But again, these are the questions I wanted to ask you
right.
today.
Okay.
You know, where is this heading? You know, we embrace people that want to come here and accept the island for what it is. But you know, who's paying these bills? You know, is there a second generation of people that can't speak the language? I've said this on the program before. People have come here and they've had to go through, like you've just said there, tests to know that you know about the Isle of Man
yeah.
and the history of the Isle of Man. So what's gone wrong here somewhere? There's something not quite right, and I'm trying to make it make sense.
Okay, I appreciate
Cheers,
that.
Andy.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for that. Simon said, Christine's absolutely spot on. My daughter is dyslexic and has one more year of primary school where her needs are looked after fairly well. I'm worried about her moving to secondary school because of the support seems to just drop off significantly. Things really need to change in that respect, says Simon. If you have any experience of that with a child in your family, I'd appreciate your opinion. The government, Gaz, the government's currently discussing homelessness, but there are insufficient homes for the 5,000 new workers and potentially 10,000 to 15,000 new residents being talked about. According to the figures reported in September 25, 363 people were living in 24 registered HMOs, houses of multiple occupancy. A climate emergency was declared 7 years ago, but surely housing is a bigger crisis for the Isle of Man and perhaps should be a priority for any available green funding. And Jen, who says she's a disgruntled Manx worker. Am I the only one getting fed up reading about benefit fraudsters overclaiming tens of thousands of pounds? What checks are being done? Surely this shouldn't be happening. Honest workers who may need to claim for a short period due to illness have to jump through hoops. While there seem to be little deterrent for fraudsters, they get a slap on the wrist and the overpayments often written off. They shouldn't be allowed to continue claiming, and much tougher punishments should be given. The news spoke of one individual being overpaid £85,000. I couldn't earn that working full-time in 3 years. Jen says it's fraud, full stop, and it doesn't seem to be treated as such. Any thoughts? The Chief Minister's announced this plan for a new specialised border agency. Mr Cannon was responding to a question at the start of this month's sitting of Tynwald. It was asked what, if any, measures are being considered following recent events in Belfast, you know, those riots. A knife attack led to several days and nights of violent unrest. Mr Cannon says the agency's introduction isn't in response to that particular attack in Belfast, rather a decision taken by Comyn several weeks ago to help partners in the UK. Here's the Chief Minister.
At this time, there is no intelligence to suggest any direct threat to the Isle of Man arising from these events. For that reason, there has been no specific change to security arrangements at our ports of entry. However, we are not and have not been complacent about ensuring that our island remains safe and secure. Honourable members will be aware not only of a clear strategic commitment to securing our borders, but that this government has taken positive action to transfer ports policing to the Isle of Man Constabulary, introduced automatic number plate recognition legislation, and improved intelligence sharing between police and customs. Proposals are also being developed to enable the use of facial recognition technology, which will, of course, be subject to consultation and legislative approval. Mr. President, 2 weeks before the events in Belfast, the Council of Ministers concluded that we could not afford to stand still and that we should strengthen our capabilities further in order to work more closely and effectively with partner agencies, including the UK Border Force and equivalent bodies in the Channel Islands and Ireland.
We were advised that we were setting up a group of people that were going to be looking at this, and they were going to set up committees. Have that group of people with the Chief Constable met since the events in Belfast? And has the Chief Minister thought of possibly setting up an email address that individuals on the island can report directly into?
Mr. President, there is no intelligence to suggest any direct threat or changes of threats to the Island Man has arisen from these events, and there has been no specific change to security arrangements at our ports of entry. I've outlined to honourable members all the actions that the Constabulary have undertaken. We too are responding to that. Our borders remain secure, but we also need to be aware of the developing and emerging threats. It's clear from the work that we've done that we can do more to consolidate our efforts, be in a better position to coordinate those efforts. Those are the steps we are taking.
Chief Minister there, I just wonder what your thoughts are regarding that, and what the impact you expect it to be. One of my family members, who's a doctor, says that people over 65 are having DNR notices placed on their records without permission, says 867. Well, if you could confirm that, firm that up with some fact, 867 at the moment, we'll class that as skeet. We've heard that DNRs are put on people's records, I'll be honest with you, until somebody shows me one, I don't really know what to say. I'm not saying you're wrong, but then again, I've not seen it. Malcolm says that road tax forms and other government forms can be collected from the Manx Wildlife Trust in Peel. I believe there are other collection points as well, if you check, says Malcolm. So off to Peel we go. I have a family member who lives in Amsterdam, and the option to register interest in assisted dying if you have a degenerative condition is available as part of normal healthcare. It's monitored, says Sue, no pressure. They aren't aware of the situation that Julian mentioned. Actually, residents seem unaware of any problems. And Texter 632 said, I am one of many people who are against assisted dying. Thank you for your opinion. I found the staff at the test centre snappy and rude, says Pat again. That's Pat's opinion. And Steve jotted me a note about assisted dying, and the answer to your question, Steve, is yes, you can. All you need to do is pick up the phone. I'm a great believer in freedom of choice, says Ian. The government shouldn't be pushing everything online, and they seem to be trying to achieve this by making it difficult for people to deal directly with another human being. I think it's a great shame that we appear to be losing the human touch these days, says Ian.
Love a proper country pub with superb food, great drinks, fantastic atmosphere and a warm welcome? Then you'll love the Ginger Hall in Sulby. From fabulous Sunday roasts and succulent steaks to pizza, chicken wraps and delicious desserts, there's something for everyone at the Ginger Hall in the pub or our restaurant. Our new menu is online and Facebook. Booking is highly recommended, so reserve your table at gingerhall.im. And why not stay over in one of our 8 ensuite hotel rooms? The Ginger Hall, country pub, restaurant and hotel.
Dig it, lift it, dump it, load it. When you need to just get on and do it, Gunn JCB it. Based in Spring Valley Trading Estate, they're the experts in JCB machinery, sales, parts and servicing. JCB have been on the island since 1960, so their local experience and knowledge will help find the ideal equipment for your project. Just call 664-866 and ask for Matt for machine sales and Dave for parts and servicing. Gunn JCB. Just do it.
Many people are struggling. You can help by volunteering or making a donation to Isle of Man Food Bank, whether it be food or essential items or financial support. Please call 646 999, brought to you by Descon Office Interiors.
Brother, we have crossed the black seas of man. We fear no storm, no wave, no...
Olaf! What is a tin bath?
The legendary Tin Bath Championships in Castletown.
Enter, we shall, and become undisputed kings of the Manx Sea.
I shall represent our clan.
You cannot even swim.
I can.
You cannot.
I can.
You cannot.
The 55th World Tin Bath Championships return this Timbled weekend, 4th of July, Castletown Harbour, 2 p.m. Enter now, worldtinbaths.com. Entries close 27th of June. Sponsored by IFGL in association with Manx Radio. Go on. Get your bum in a bath.
Tonight here on Manx Radio at the brand new time of 6.30, join Kiri Kermode and myself, Simon Clark, for the brand new series of Countryside.
I went along to Orrisdale to the Leaf Open Farm Sunday.
And I went along to the Silly Moose campsite last week after the TT had all settled down and the last of the bikers were heading back home. I found out from Fiona Brumby how the fortnight had gone with the visitors.
That's all in Countryside tonight here on Manx Radio at 6.30. And don't forget, you can download or subscribe to the podcast for free. ManxRadio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And here's Victoria. Hello, Victoria.
Hi. Whenever the fall in the birth rate is mentioned, the government's immediate go-to is we need to bring in more people. But do they ever look at the health of the people of the Isle of Man in regard to fertility, miscarriage, stillbirth, deaths in young people? Do they question why? Or is it just like, oh, we just get more people?
Well, I'll be honest with you, that doesn't seem to me like that's the first thing that they think of. I mean, obviously that the population is always linked to economic growth and the fact that we need people, and the fact that, people, women, aren't having as many babies as they used to, that seems to be what happens. Why do you mention the health?
Well, nobody says why it's dropping.
Well, it's
that's why it's just like, oh, we need it's dropping, it's falling, we need more people. And I know I'm not against people coming to work. We've got some really good people who've come to the island working in the hospitals and various places, and they have got a good strong work ethic. And not only do they speak English, but they are also aware of the laws in the Isle of Man, which is very important. It's, you know, you say, oh, history, English. But some people, I know they've had this problem across where they've had people, it's like, well, we can do this in our country. It's like, well, you can't do it in ours, and we are not changing the law to allow you to do that. These are our laws, so they need to be made aware of the laws. But wouldn't it be good, you know, to look at why the birth rate is dropping and not just say, oh, it's falling, so let's just get some more people.
Well, yesterday, Mr. Crane, I mean, he kind of cited the fact that women have got more professional choices. Basically, more women go to work than ever used to. It's expensive to raise a child. It costs a fortune to raise a child. Now, people just, he seemed to say that it was the cost and the opportunity.
Well, I don't think it's, I think it's, yes, you look at that. I've worked with, when I lived across, lots of professional women, and they had more kids than me. And yeah, they could afford the healthcare, but they still had families.
Yeah.
They don't seem to look at, I haven't heard anything about looking at the health.
Right, okay.
Of young people, you know, of childbearing age.
Right,
What
are you saying? Are you talking about young women, or are you talking about the? Because they've also talked about the fertility of young men and how men's fertility has gone down.
Yeah. There's a whole load of things they could look at as to why, but I have never heard them say with anything about health. So
that's
something someone could come on and talk about.
Well, it's a generational thing, isn't it? I mean, I don't know how old you are. I won't ask. But, I mean, when you were at school, probably there were people who got three and four brothers and sisters in school. Doesn't really happen now, does it?
I know quite a few people who've had about five kids. I'm from a family of nine.
Right.
And that was, there was quite a few people with large families. I mean, there's a girl I was at school with. She's had seven kids. I'm 68 now, so yeah, people did have larger families. But I talk to a lot of people, and they haven't got one child. But I just thought it was worth somebody coming on and talking to us about, you know, are they looking at the health? Both young men and women.
Good point. All right, that's something we'll keep there. So it's the health of young women and young men. Is that a reason that they aren't having children? All right, Victoria.
Yeah. All right, thanks
good,
a lot.
Good to hear from you, thank you. And Juan's with us now. Hi, Juan.
Hey, boy, how you doing?
Good, yeah, what's on your mind?
The first thing was just about taxing vehicles and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I stress out about getting forms and things like that. I really struggle with forms. So, to me, the new way to doing it online, it's been so simple. And with me struggling to do forms all the time, I used to take around to meet my mum, to get my mum to do it. And she's done the online thing for me as well. And she's must be nearly 70 now. She's knocking on, and she went online, did it. And it's so simple. People just need to get with the get with the times. Like, they're living in the old yellow logbook times and going into the post office and stuff. You don't even need to log in to your government account.
Yeah.
You can literally just go on, put the number plate in and go out. It's so simple. And the girls up at the test centre are doing a really good job. They're trying their hardest, and they're getting treated like muck up there sometimes. People are coming in. It's not their fault.
Right.
They didn't organise it. They didn't do it. But so they're going up there.
Just
people
tell
coming
me,
in, and they're taking them out the back room.
Tell me, June, then, did your mother do it and show you how to do it? Is that what happened?
Yeah, well, I must admit, the letter came through. I was like, oh, I've got my letter here. Can you sort this out for me? And I was around the house with her at the time. And, yeah, we all went through it, and she learned how to do it at the same time. But, yeah, so simple. People just say, oh, I can't do this. I'll go up there and argue with the women behind the counter whose fault it's not. So yeah, that was the first thing. And then the other one was just about Julian saying that it's getting worse,
right,
in Canada and wherever, about the assisted dying bill. But in his view, it's getting worse. But, you know, I know life is precious and stuff, but these people are wanting to go. So, in their eyes, it's getting better, isn't it?
Mm. So, what's your thought about assisted dying?
I think life is precious, like I say, but I think sometimes we need to stop worrying about it so much. And if people are wanting to go, and everything is pointing towards the signs that they need to go, then let them go. What's the point in keeping them here? And I'd want to go. If I was becoming a drain on society and, you know, this, that and the other, and if I was living in pain, all the rest of it, I've told my kids just to push me off the side of Snake Fell in a wheelchair or something. That'd be a good way.
Well, in that case, we'll leave it on that note, Juan. Thanks for calling today.
Cheers, boys. See you later.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for that. Well, we've talked about many things. If you want to follow up on anything, of course, you can call the answer phone, or you can email out of hours, maninline@manxradio.com, or call 682-631. Regarding Mr. Cannon's comments, I have to say, this will be welcomed. I spoke to 8 people over the TT period who used 3 airports, Liverpool, Manchester and Gatwick, none of whom were asked for ID, and they walked straight through at Ronald's Way, says Kenny. My wife speaks fluent English, but it remains her second language. Surely children need to be given support to thrive in the educational system, just saying. Says 951. Tomorrow we're going to be live at school. I'm going back to school tomorrow, QE2 in Peel, with Year 12 students, so we'll hear what they have to say. I'm back with another open line on Thursday. Thanks to Chris on the phones today. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. WINT